That was a little bit more like it, Bill Belichick, wasn't it?
That was a good night last night. You know, our players really stepped up and did a great job. We had a lot of guys play banged up and lost a couple guys in the game, but you know, the players really really responded and showed a lot of toughness and grit down there. So it was good. Good win.
Amazing part of this game was defensively, you were plucking in guys off the practice squad just before the game. Why did that defense come together so well last night?
Players did a good job. They did a good job. I think everybody is well prepared, really studied what the Jets are doing. They knew what we were doing. We were able to execute it pretty well. Got some pressure, made some plays in the coverage. And our offense did a great job in the second half, moving the ball, controlling the clock, keeping the defense off the field. And we had pretty good field position with our kicking game, so it was good.
You know, I wish we still had the caller on the line, Bill, who called just before you walked in, and he was asking about the play. There was illegal contact on Deion Branch. Gronkowski caught the touchdown pass. They ruled, after reviewing the play, that he ran out of bounds. Did you get a good explanation of that play? Because some people are wondering, well, why didn't the penalty kind of trump the running out of bounds? He still was interfered with. Why wasn't that? Why didn't the Patriots get first and goal because of that situation?
Well, the flag was picked up because they ruled that the contact was when the quarterback was out of the pocket.
And so the fact that he was out of the pocket.
So there was no penalty on the play.
The original penalty, the one
the original, the original penalty was not a penalty because he was out of the pocket.
Right, so there was no penalty on the play.
But once they reviewed it and they saw Gronkowski step out of bounds in the back of the end zone and he's the first to touch the ball, that's a penalty.
Yes.
But the penalty wasn't found out until the replay. Have you seen that before?
Well, if the play is replayed, every part of the play is looked at. So a player stepping out of bounds is looked at. Whether it was a catch or a trap ball would be looked at. If he crossed the goal line, if it was closer to the goal line, it would all be part of the play. They're not just going to review the play and say, okay, well, Rob caught the pass because he had his hands under the ball and it was a catch, and not, you know, correct him stepping out of the back of the end zone if that was missed by the officials.
So to call wave off the touchdown, they'd have to enforce the penalty. You'd have no choice.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
The no penalty, that happens all the time, really. Not all the time, but that's the way it happens. The official throws the flag based on illegal contact downfield.
Right.
Then he checks with the referee to see, was the quarterback in the pocket or was he out of the pocket? And if he's out of the pocket, then he'll pick the flag up and there's no call.
Right.
So that part of it, the mechanics of that are, you know, we've seen that before. So it's a flag, but it isn't a flag because the quarterback scrambled.
Well, was there a penalty?
The problem in the play-by-play description of it, it claims that the Patriots declined the initial penalty on Leonard, which is not true. They picked that up.
That was picked up.
Right. So that's
there was no penalty on the play.
Right.
The penalty on the play was on us for stepping out of bounds and then being the first to touch the ball.
Right.
Okay. So they got it right. All right, one for the bad guys.
Right, yeah, no, it was, yeah. Well, I mean, the only thing you could argue is whether or not Tom was out of the pocket when Leonard pushed Branch.
Yes.
Which, it's close call, but.
It was. They diagrammed it, and they put the telestrator on it on the broadcast, and it was a very close call.
Yeah. So I didn't see that part of it, but just watching it on the coach's tape. Tom definitely moves around there, but he doesn't. On that particular play, it doesn't really get too far outside the tackle box, if at all. So it's a close play.
Yep. When they miss calls, Bill, when they get it wrong, I know when Mike Pereira used to do a show, he would come out and say, "Okay, this was called correctly, and they screwed this one up." Do you guys get when you are the victim? Is not the right word, but when you're on the wrong end of a bad call, do they let you know? Do they call and say, "All right, you know, sorry, Bill, we screwed that up."
No, the way it works is you can call and ask about a particular call. So you can send into the league, you know, I want you to look at these three plays from the game. Was the ruling on this correct, or why wasn't this the ruling, or whatever it was? And then they'll reply to that and tell you what the proper ruling should have been, whether that was what they actually did or not.
Because the one that just really got to me was, you guys got a 15-yard penalty because one of your players ran into another of your players. Really, that's what happened when McCourty got hurt. It was a collision, I believe, was Moore.
Sterling Moore.
Right. But they said it was helmet-to-helmet contact. It was helmet-to-helmet from a Patriot to a Patriot, which may be a first, a 15-yard penalty for running into your own player. At least that's the way it looked when they replayed it three or four times.
Right. Yeah, and that's the way it looked to me, too, because, you know, I saw it was Burris, right, on the catch?
Yes.
Yeah, right. I saw Burris on the catch, and he never really moved because he wasn't hit. Devin was hit. You know, there was just there wasn't a lot of contact on Burris from Sterling coming in there. And so I thought that Sterling hit Devin, not Burris. But the league rule on that is, in kind of the way they explain it, I mean, this is their explanation, not mine, is, you know, we're concerned about player safety, so if anything like that's close, we're going to call it. Now, you know, for any official, you have to see a foul before you can call one. You can't just call something based on what you think was going to happen. You actually have to see it happen. And I don't know what he saw on that. I mean, he, you know, the guy who called it was right in front of me. He was on the sideline. It wasn't from the back judge who was back there by the play. It was from the guy on the sideline. So he said that he was instructed to call that as a foul, so he called it. I mean, I don't know.
More of a reaction to the sound, more than likely, because the sound of helmet on helmet is very distinct in that situation.
And they're more concerned about those type of hits now too. So,
yeah. Well, while we're on the subject, any updates on Devin McCourty?
You know, I saw Devin this morning. You know, we'll see how he is here. You know, in the next couple of days. I mean, you know, he's a little sore today, so we'll take a look at it and see what he can do. You know, we go out to practice on Wednesday.
How do you find more players right now if you need them? If you're so weak on your depth chart at certain positions, how do you find them? Other practice squad players from other teams, if you don't have them within your practice squad?
Yeah, well, sure, that's one way. Yeah, you could sign a player off another practice squad. You sign them off your practice squad, another practice squad, or a player that's not with any team.
And that's all part of the scouting department. They've got books on every practice squad player in the league.
Well, yeah, we've looked. Oh, sure, yeah, we've looked at every player in the league that's on a practice squad. I mean, basically, what we have is a depth chart that has each position listed, and if we needed a player at that position, who would be the, you know, right guard, center, right tackle, Sam linebacker, top special teams players, kicker, punter, long snap. You know, who knows what you're going to need, but you have those players, and then if somebody signs that player, then you move another player up, or as a player gets released by another team and isn't picked up and he's available, then you add him to that list if that's a guy that you would want on that list. Mm-hmm. And it could come, as you said, from another team's practice squad.
You know, it's no surprise to us in New England to see an offensive player playing defense, defensive player playing offense, you know, Mike Vrabel, Troy Brown. So seeing Julian Edelman in there yesterday at defensive back, it's not really a shocker, and probably shocked the national audience. How much time typically do you give those guys practice on both sides of the ball? Or did you anticipate, you know, a little thin in the secondary with the injury? So, hey, Julian, this week you're going to have a little more time on defense, or your first time on defense?
Well, it's, you know, that started a while back where we worked with them over there. But again, there are different ways you can practice it. One is in a full team drill. One is in a passing drill. Another would be just to do it on a one-on-one basis and, you know, let a defensive back cover a receiver, or vice versa. So it's some combination of all those. And of course, we went into this week, you know, knowing that we were a little light in the secondary, with only 8 defensive backs active. So we worked him some, probably more this week than we did maybe the last couple weeks or whatever. But that's fairly common.
And we've seen guys do it, you probably did in high school and some in college, you know, playing all over the place. Two-way players is not that unusual. In the pros, could you just put it in perspective how difficult it is to do? I know Roy Green did it for the Cardinals and switched positions back in the day, Troy Brown, Vrabel. I mean, how unusual, how difficult is that at this level, the best athletes in the country?
Well, I think it's, you know, there's certainly a challenge to it. I think for a player to do it, he probably is a pretty versatile, flexible player, both athletically and mentally in terms of learning. But, again, a lot of those positions are, there's a correlation to them. And if you understand concepts, then that makes it a lot easier. So Mike Vrabel as a linebacker lines up across from a tight end all the time. To put him at tight end, he at least understands, you know, what it's like to deal with a linebacker, i.e. himself. Or Troy Brown, who plays in the slot, now covering a slot, he has a pretty good, conceptually, well, why is this slot split tight? Well, he's trying to, you know, set up something. Why is he, you know, split wide? Or if there's, you know, so I mean, he can relate passing concepts to defense because of his familiarity with mod offense.
Almost like turning yourself around, like you're driving in another country. Like, oh, wait a minute, I can't be on the right side. I got to be on the left side of the road, or I'm going to be in trouble.
Yeah, and again, that's not easy for all players. I mean, some players have a hard time. It's just the way they are. I mean, Steve, you know, some guys, you move them from right guard to left guard, and it's, you know, it's like going from German to Mandarin Chinese.
Right.
You know? And there's other guys that, right guard, left guard, you know, it doesn't matter.
Even left end or defensive end, right end or left end, you figure, okay, it's just the other foot, other shoulder, whatever. But it's, you can see some guys are natural right ends and some guys are natural left ends.
I've had players tell me, I feel like everything's backwards.
Yeah.
It just doesn't look right to me over here. It just looks backwards. And again, there's other guys that, you know, right end, left end, I mean, they don't even think about it. But so it's
practice with a mirror. Maybe that'll help, you know?
Yeah, well, I think it depends on the individual. It really depends on the individual. I don't think there's any set formula for it.
Hey, Bill, you guys have had great success with the no-huddle this year. Is the no-huddle more successful in the modern-day football, and that you're seeing so many different personnel changes right now for specific situations? You know, yesterday, nickel, dime, we saw 7 DBs out there for the Jets. Does it work more effectively now than maybe it did before when the game was pretty standard? You kept your same personnel out there.
Well, I mean, I think back to when I was a kid growing up watching Johnny Unitas and Raymond Berry and Jimmy Orr and those guys go no huddle. It seemed like every time they went no huddle at the end of the game, they just walked the ball right down the field and scored. So, I don't know. I think the one thing you're seeing now defensively is because defensively we have to defend so much more than we used to. Empty formations, one-back formations, tight ends who are really receivers, if you will, and people going in and out of the game on a regular basis, that you have calls that are set for certain groups or certain formations or a certain structure. Like, we're only going to call this defense when we get a certain look, as opposed to just calling one thing and be able to play it against every single thing that they do. I mean, that's really hard to just call one defense, and it doesn't matter whether they line up in, you know, 5 receivers or one receiver with a whole bunch of tight end. You know, can you call one thing against everything and make it go? It puts a strain on the defense. So when you go no huddle, then that puts the defense in a communication mode. Either they do the same thing all the time and limit the communication, or they try to adjust the different things, but now they've got to do it a lot quicker and recognize it in a split second. And if they don't get out there and cover a receiver like Branch, then Tom will just, you know, raise up and zip it to him. Or sometimes when you run the ball to the perimeter, if the run force isn't coordinated, which again, that's sometimes hard to do, especially if you're changing formations around, you know, who's got the run force, who's responsible for turning the play back in, then a lot of times you can get outside for, you know, easy gains. And if you go, you know, with a spread formation, you know, receiver gets uncovered or you see a matchup that you want to get to, and you have plenty of time to change your play and get to it. You know what I mean? So it forces the defense to show its hand early, and now you're up there at the line of scrimmage and there's 25 seconds left on the clock, and you want to change it. You certainly have the time to change it, as opposed to a 2-minute drill where you're trying to, you don't have, you know, you
hurry
need
up.
That time. You know, this is really, you have time if you need it, but if you want to press the issue, you know, it's like a fast break. you know, if you got the numbers and you can go to the hoop, then you take it. If they're back and you need to set up your offense, then you can, you know, set it up and get into a better pattern. So it gives you some flexibility there. The downside of the no huddle is you can't run your whole offense. I mean, you can't use motion. You can't substitute, because then they can substitute. So you have to trim it down to what, you know, what that group can do. Usually the group that you do it with is a pretty versatile group for your offense. You know, they probably have the biggest variety of plays on your offensive team. Otherwise, again, you're going no huddle with a group that only can do a few things.
Can it wear down the defense a little bit more in that they have to keep the same personnel out there?
Sure. Yeah, sure. Especially a team that wants to rotate people on the front seven. Yeah, I think that puts some pressure on them. Of course, it wears you down too.
Yeah.
You know, so I think you got to be cognizant of that, of you know, where you are in the game, what the situation is, and just where, not that, I mean, at this point in the season, you know, everybody's in condition. I don't think it's about conditioning, but within a game, there are certain times that take a lot of strain, you know, on your team, one way or the other. But if you can kind of get the sense that we feel like they're tiring, or they're expending a lot more energy than we are, and we feel good, and we're ready for it. We're not dragging. We don't need to. Then you press it. But if you feel like, hey, we can press it, but we're struggling a little bit here too, you know, for whatever reason, then probably might be better off backing down.
Yeah.
And again, you know, the guys that do the run on the receivers. I mean, the offensive linemen,
yeah,
they, you know,
same thing,
go
right
where the ball's spotted. Right. But, you know, you got guys running, you know, 20, 30-yard routes downfield, and they got to come back and run another one. And, you know, you lose something there. You know, and again, so do the guys that are covering them, especially if they're in man coverage. So that's part of it too.
Your offense seemed more efficient in the second half. Was that because of adjustments or execution?
Yeah, you know, I'd say both. I think, you know, the more we saw them, and they, you know, they had, like you mentioned, a lot of different looks. They had their six DBs. They had a couple different groups of that. Then they had their seven DBs, and they had their regular defense. Not only shuffling those groups in and out, but mixing in their fronts were some odds, some evens, some what we call diamonds, you know. Sometimes Smith was back, sometimes he's up, sometimes Leonard was back, Leonard was up. You know, they were matched up differently depending on what the group was. So, you know, after a while, we kind of got a feel for it, and that certainly helped us. And I think we executed some things better, too. You know, we had some basic, you know, like screwing up the center snap back there, you know, inside our own 10-yard line. I mean, you know, those kind of plays, doesn't matter what they're in. You know, that's not good. So, but our execution was better, and we gained some familiarity, and were able to not only see but anticipate some of the matchups. And I think that also helped us in the no huddle, because, you know, a lot of times when they're running around trying to get lined up, you know, you can either wait for them and let them get set and then make sure everybody knows what to do, or you can just snap it and go and hope that you kind of fall into things. And the more familiar you feel about with what they're doing, the easier it is to snap it quick and say, okay, we know how this is going to turn out.
You know, you used a basketball analogy earlier, and with the basketball tradition in this town, people know about great players getting hot. You know, we saw Kevin McHale one score 50. I think you covered that game, by the way. Kevin McHale one score 56, and then Larry Bird came back
7 days later
and scored what, 60?
60.
Scored 60. So guys get hot, and you can just feel it. Andre Carter, 4.5 sacks in the game. I know you draw it up and you say, you know, we could probably take advantage of this matchup, but do you get a sense that a guy is just getting into that zone and getting hot, and you wind up with that very rare 4.5 sack night?
Yeah, well, no doubt about it. Andre had a great night, and he's had a good year for us all year. I'm not sure that he played a lot better last night than he has in some other games. You know, some things worked for him, it just fell right. I mean, like the first sack, when Mayo blitzed, Ferguson could have either taken Carter or Mayo, and he slid down and took Gerard, and that left, you know, Andre coming clean off the edge unblocked, and, you know, so Sanchez has hit the dirt when he saw him coming. So, you know, it's a good play by Andre, but he was unblocked, and it could have just as easily been Mayo there. Just, you know, whichever guy Ferguson took, the other guy would have been free. So, but Andre's done a great job for him. I'm not taking anything away from him. But, again, I think the sack number is one of the most misleading, you know, stats in football. Sometimes you rush a passer good, and something, the ball's gone because the coverage isn't there. They happen to have a quick pass on or whatever. And then there's other times where you, you know, you get a better opportunity. The quarterback holds the ball a little bit, like the situation where I think it was on maybe his second sack, where Mark Anderson came up inside, and Sanchez wanted to step up in the pocket, but he couldn't, and Anderson came up inside, so Sanchez rolled around to the defensive left, and Andre came around and got him from the backside. And, you know, again, had Sanchez kind of stepped up into the pocket to get away from Andre, he would have stepped into Mark. But in this particular case, he stepped away from Mark and back into Andre. So, you know, again, both guys did a good job. Andre got the play, but that's kind of how good team defense works. And sometimes some guys get them more than others.
Eliminating the sacks, it does seem like, and certainly did last night, like your defensive front is putting a lot more pressure on the quarterback and obviously not giving the quarterback as much time. Is that accurate?
Well, I thought we had overall good pressure last night. Yeah, overall. I mean, we had our moments, but, yeah. I mean, I think our pass rush at times during the year has been good. Other times, it could certainly be better.
You know, Vince was talking earlier about the work ethic of Carter. He said this guy is unbelievable. He said he reminded him of Vrabel, that he's always going, always on the field. Because I asked him, who does he remind you of? He said Vrabel. How about you? I mean, if you...
No, I think that's a good comparison. Yeah. Andre is in tremendous condition. I mean, he does. He practices hard. He works hard. He, you know, sprints to the ball on every play. And he never seems to get tired. You look at him, and you never look at him and see him doubled over and looking like, you know, well, he needs a couple minutes here to get his breath. He just doesn't look like that. He's always going hard, and when a ball snapped, you see him in that stance with, you know, his butt up in the air and his weight on his hand, and the ball snapped and he's explodes off the ball again time after time after time. So he's not only got a good motor, he's not only in good condition, but he's got that mentality of just, you know, really on every snap, you know, charging off the ball with a lot of, you know, energy and purpose.
Has Gronkowski been what you've expected?
Well, Rob's improved a lot, you know, in the year and a half that he's been here. You know, of course, he missed his entire junior year of football, and then we drafted him, so he was out for a full year. And he continues to get better and better at a lot of things that he does. You can see it weekly on the practice field. You know, one of the things he did great last night, which is something that we've really been working on, and it just happened to come up, was the scramble plays. You know, I think he caught at least two passes where... and the one at the end of the game, late in the fourth quarter, where he came out away from Eric Smith, caught the ball on the sideline for a first down. It's like second and seven or something like that. But, you know, where he's recognized the scramble situation, is able to uncover off the defender who was on him. You know, Tom picked him up and hit him on a couple of those. And the touchdown that was called back was another one. So the one to start the two-minute drive where he crossed the field, and that was another play that, you know, had we not hit that play, you know, I don't know if the drive would have got started. Then the next one he scrambled on where they called him on the fumble, but then ruled him down. Then he had to play in the end zone, which was a scramble play. So it's four. He has four scramble plays in the game that, again, that's a lot of work, a lot of experience, a lot of, you know, not doing it right in practice, but eventually getting it right, and then it transferring over into the field in the game. So has Rob been what I've expected? Rob has a lot of talent. Rob, you know, works hard. Brian Ferentz, his position coach, you know, rides him hard, gets on him, demands that he do a lot of little things right. And he and Aaron have both improved over the last year, and they continue to do that. So we'll see where Rob can get, but he's a good player, and I don't think he's hit the top yet.
Kansas City next Monday. We don't have an awful lot of time, but let's get into it. Todd Haley said today, Matt Cassel, significant hand injury, could end his season. Looks like you'll be facing Tyler Palko on Monday. He played a little bit in that game yesterday. Tell us everything we need to know about Tyler.
Well, we're going to have to do a little more work on Tyler. Obviously, we know Matt Cassel well from, you know, the 4 years we had him here and even seeing him last January out at the Pro Bowl. But Palko and Stanzi, you know, we're going to have to spend more time on. You know, we haven't played the Chiefs in a while and really don't get to see a lot of them on tape. So we're going to have to work not only on the quarterbacks but on all their players and start to, you know, get more familiar with them. Again, they're kind of the opposite of the Jets. The Jets, you know, we know everybody and played against them and know them inside out and have multiple looks at them against either ourselves or other competition. Kansas City's a team that, and like the Giants, like Oakland, like Dallas, that, you know, it's been a few years since we played them, and we're in a whole different process. So that's we're grinding through that today.
I'm going to go offbeat a second on you and ask you about something that you're familiar with, different context, but I think one of the best parts of football life was the access where you're talking about fourth and two, and you said, guys, you can say a lot of things about me, but I'm not scared. I'm not scared to put us in a position to win the game. Didn't work out for us this time, but I'm going to do it. Yesterday, Mike Smith, who you know pretty well, own 29, 30-yard line, overtime, goes for it. What did you think of that call, and just talk about the decisions that you have to make very quickly to either say yay or nay in that situation, fourth and inches, overtime?
Yeah, well, I've been there. In fact, we made that same decision, I think, in the first quarter of the Atlanta game in, was that 9?
Yeah, same point of the field.
Like, yeah.
Same, like right around 28.
Yeah, we ran a dive play to Sammy Morris and picked it up. So, it's a tough one. I think, if I'm not mistaken, in that particular game, the New Orleans game, they threw the ball, they didn't make it, then they challenged the play, or there was a review of the play, then there was a timeout, then the punt team came out, then there was another timeout, then it was multiple switching back and substitutions and all that. So,
I said he was going to punt and then changed his mind.
Yeah, so it wasn't like a bang bang play. There was some back and forth on it. It's easy to sit here and after it happened, have a commentary on the play. But I think, every coach tries to put his team in the best position that he can to win. And I'm sure Mike did that. Mike and Sean are both, I have a lot of respect for both those coaches. I think they're both great coaches, both good friends. Obviously, since we have New Orleans first round pick next year, you got to be pulling for Atlanta in that game. But that aside, it's a tough one. I feel for Mike. I know what that feels like. But at the same time, you got to make the decisions that you feel are best for your team. And as he put it after the game, I think if you can't make whatever it was 6 inches, then that's probably not a good. Probably doesn't bode well for the outcome of the game. And I can certainly understand that too.
Would you rather have it a bang bang decision, or would you rather have three timeouts to think about it?
I think in those situations, the way I personally look at it, I can't speak for anybody else. The way I personally look at it is, there's times where you have to make a certain decision based on the situation. There are other times where you don't, and to me, what's important there is how good you feel about the play. If you feel like you have a good play, and you're confident in that play or the execution of that play, then I personally would be a lot more inclined to go for it, even if the conventional wisdom would be not to. At the same time, if I didn't have a lot of confidence in that particular situation relative to the team we were playing, even a conventional wisdom said, hey, this might be a good time to go for it, I probably wouldn't do that, because I wouldn't feel like we have a play that I was overly confident in. So to me, the play, because you talk about those situations, you go into the game and say, okay, if we get fourth and one, if we get fourth and two, if it's like it was in the Giants game, fourth and 10 on the 15, if we get fourth and goal on the 10, how good do we feel about that play? Or depending on how well you've practiced it, how well you execute it, how good you feel about the players doing it, to me, that tilts me one way or the other as to what decision to make.
All right, Bill. Nice win last night. Good luck against Kansas City. We'll be doing it Tuesday next week, so we'll see you
then.
That's
right. Okay. All right. See you Tuesday.
All right.
Thanks.
Bill Belichick right here on The Big Show and Patriots Monday.